time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Hello and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you're listening, right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Good morning to you, Redmond.
Good morning, Patrick. Fantastic to be here as usual. How are you?
Going very well. Not quite as well as how you've been going this week. I'm broadcasting from Noosa at the moment. I must say the weather's been, well, it's been a few scattered showers. It's better than the 2 degrees that sort of Victoria's been experiencing early in the mornings of late. But you got out earlier in the week. You went out with our great mate Paul Worsling and the great man Chris Vasileski from Gone Fishing Charters. You were doing a bit of work with the tuna champions and catching a few southern bluefin tuna off Apollo Bay. So this is fascinating in itself because it's so close to Melbourne. Obviously, one of the big draw cards in Victorian fishing is Portland and the fishing clearly that they get at different stages. But it's a four-hour drive from metropolitan Melbourne, 4 hours plus. Apollo Bay, on the other hand, is far closer, even though you're spending a bit of time in the boat. Take us through your journey and the planning that went into your fishing earlier in the week because you caught some wonderful fish and there's been some really great fish being caught off Apollo Bay and right through that southern region of Victoria at the moment.
Yeah, so Paul gave me a call during last week and said basically he needs to do the tuna champion stuff that you've spoken about. And what that includes is basically literally everything that is involved in looking after your bluefin tuna.
So this is from capture to landing it on the deck, yep, and then preserving the fish as best as humanly possible to preserve as much flesh as possible. And it's essentially respecting the southern bluefin tuna for what they are and you know, taking what you're going to eat and no more than that, essentially.
Yes, and you're spot on. And also to get the quality out of the meat that you want to. That's another big factor in it as well.
Because there's so many different parts of the southern bluefin tuna that you can actually eat. You can eat parts of its face. So if you put in the time and energy and effort,
they reckon the cheekbone's the best part, Patrick, yeah, they say that.
Yeah, but it's quite extraordinary.
And like you said before, it's a huge, huge effort to do it properly. This is going to, it's a little bit contradicting. As a fisherman, it's very hard to do things properly when you've got 100 plus kilo fish jumping out of the water. Now, what I mean by that is we're filming, literally cameras are rolling and we've got to get the best shots to make this look presentable, like removing blood out of the way, doing a lot of things. But this comes down to actually doing the right things. And when we're on camera, it takes a fair bit of time to get, like the fish might jump the wrong way and you start again. Everything adds up. So we were off Apollo Bay, like you said, and we're a long way offshore and we had barrels literally everywhere. And we're just dropping in red baits and pilchard into the water, cubing for them. And that's how we were catching these fish. And the process starts from there.
So cubing for the uninitiated and those that haven't done it before, talk us through exactly what it is.
Yeah, so I've got a different mindset on it. A lot of people spend a lot of money and buy, say, for instance, 200 kilos of pilchards and they go out there and they literally cube them. Now, in New South Wales,
meaning they chop up the pilchards and they throw cubes of it into the water.
Even whole fish, they just launch it over. And in New South Wales, when you're running that 1,000 metres of water, and we're starting to see some great bluefin show up in New South Wales at the moment, Pat, and as you're trawling along that shelf, you mark up fish or you hook up on the lures. These fish are migrating, so they're travelling, and they still need to eat while they're doing this. But what often happens is you call all your mates in, and we've spoken about it on the show numerous times, and you throw heaps of cubes in to bring these fish, and they actually stay with the boat feeding. Now, what's happening here in Apollo Bay, we have had no drama whatsoever landing fish after fish without wasting 50 kilos of pilchards. Yep. So the red bait's on the top of the water. So my theory is get that pilchard into that bait or red, whatever the bait is, and let it sink through. You don't need to waste. I've done 2 or 3 days throwing pillies, and we've got fish literally pretty much every time we pull up onto that bait ball. So you don't need to waste it. But the process comes back to that tuna champions process that we spoke about is literally having the right gear to handle these fish. Now, people will say it's great to catch fish on light gear. The problem with tuna is they're such a powerful fish, they heat up their core temperature so quick. So the longer you fight these fish, it's actually bad to release them if you're going to release them.
It's the lactic acid that builds up.
Lactic acid literally builds up through it, and you want to get rid of that stuff. We'll go into that in a second. But then, so it's the process of having the right gear to handle these fish. So 50 wise, for instance, 24 kilo, and we're running 20,000 stallers on some seriously heavy rods as well.
Yep.
Now, that's where the first process starts, not going out there with a knife to a gunfight. It's having the right gear to get the fish in, hopefully, as quick as you can.
I think that's the most enjoyable way to tackle a giant barrel versus being winched in by a Tiagra 50 wide.
I don't know. I'm going to argue that with you. I want to see you bent over on a Stella there. You'll get. It's going to hurt you.
It's a great point.
Oh, it is. No, in hindsight, honestly. Oh, how much fun's that? We got it on spin gear.
Until you
3 hours later. So, you are right. It is the. And we got some 50 kilo fish, which were great fun to catch. But if we had got 100, we didn't get 100. But if we had got 100 kilo, we wouldn't be saying, I would be yelling at you right now. But no, you are spot on. But those 50s are hard to use. They're hard to flick your pilchards in. So that process starts there. And I dragged on a little bit. We'll get into the process. We land the fish. Now, those smaller fish, if you have a net, which is a quality net, so you want to have a net that doesn't have, it's not rough. It's a soft, fish-friendly net.
Yes.
So say, for instance, we're going to release the fish. You net it. It goes onto a yoga mat as such. And then you pop the hook out and you can throw it back. That's how to release them. The big girls that come in that you can't physically, if you're having fun and you've already got one and you want to release it, just cut it off at the hook and leave the hook in the fish. That's the best thing to do. Try not to put a gaff in its mouth and things like that, which you can if you want a photo because it doesn't affect the way they eat, but it's not a great thing. You wouldn't like a hole in your lip, would you? It's going to hurt, but you'll still eat. So back to the next step, as in killing the fish, catching and killing. Now, those small fish, say 20 up to 30 kilo, for instance, Pat, you're probably going to want to, you get anything bigger than 30, you don't want to net it. It's just too hard. You don't realize that, yes, they fit in the net, but they're so bloody heavy.
Yep.
They're heavy and they smash. So a gaff.
They thrash and
they
smash.
They literally smash. So we're talking about kill shots here, Pat. So this is where the gaff comes into it. You want to gaff these fish. Once again, pull it onto that yoga mat. That yoga mat's that step that comes in. And the reason for that is when you do the next steps where the fish bangs, you don't want it hitting on the aluminium floor or whatever floor you've got in the boat. So that step there comes into putting on the yoga mat. Then all of a sudden, the spike goes in, the Ikejima spike, I'm pretty sure it's called. Excuse my pronunciation if I'm wrong. And you can actually buy these tuna. You know what? I'll even talk about the kit a bit later on in Red's Tip. We'll go through the actual everything in it and what it's used for a bit later. So that first one's the spike. And then when you actually spike the fish, it actually makes the fish go brain dead. So it actually kills the fish. But the heart is an involuntary muscle. So it actually still beats without the brain. And that's pretty. And it's the same thing with when I had my heart transplant. That's the same thing with organ donation. The heart, the organs are still working. And the heart still pumps. Hence why I could receive my heart. And it's the same with the tuna. So the next step is bleeding the fish straight away. Don't take the gills and guts out of it too quick because you want that heart to pump that blood through that body. That's what you want to do. So you nick it with it comes in the kit. Then it comes down to running a wire. There's a little soft spot on the tuna's head. You can run your wire through and that runs literally from the head of the fish to the tail and it runs along the spine and it kills all the nerves and whatnot, stops the fish from moving and relaxes all the muscles, which makes the fish taste better once again. And then the last step, you've obviously got the coring, the gilling and whatnot. So you take a few incisions around the gills and you can take the whole stomach content out of this fish and then you can pack it with ice and cool it down. Now, I like to actually, and I've said this before on the show, people gut their fish instantly. I don't think that's a great thing because, like I said before, the heart's what actually pushes the blood out. So somehow I like to run water through that fish to try and get the blood out as quick as possible. And we're on Chris Vasilis. He's gone fishing his big, big boat. He had a big kill tank, which is like a live bait tank. So we could put him in there to get the blood out of it.
Yep.
And then straight away, as soon as that blood's done, it's instantly straight into the ice as quick as you possibly can. And that there is pretty much the rough steps on being a tuna champion. And the reason it is because a few years ago, Pat, as you know, pretty much tuna were going to be done for. If stuff like this wasn't put into play, as in you and I talking about it now, take what you need, look after it and everything. But one thing it is hard to do is go out there and have barrels jumping everywhere and do this bloody process because it takes time. I will be honest.
To film it, you're talking about.
Or even just to do the process, like you got to get on the ground and bleed it. And like it does take a fair bit of time. So That there's the steps. It is hard to do. And then having a catch bag, it is crucial to have a bag that fits the fish size. And Mad Fish Gear do a you're not going to put a cool box on the boat, let's be honest, that because they're just too big. Have your food and drinks into it.
You could, but it'd be 3 meters long.
That's right. It's too big. And that you could do it. And if you're most people are in trailer boats,
Not practical.
It's not practical for what you're doing. Yeah, by all means, have your beer and your Jameson cold on the side there. But your fish, these Mad Fish bags are what I recommend, 100%. And it literally they don't hold ice anywhere near what a Dometic does, let's be honest. Not even close.
Yep.
But they do the job for your 2 days that you're going to... And you want to relate a barrel and big fish, you want to actually leave it in the ice for up to about 24 hours to actually let everything in that fish relax and all the muscles in that ice cool actually do its thing inside. And that's how you get the quality out of that fish.
You're listening to Real Adventures. This is a bit of a school holiday special because right around the country, school holidays are upon us. Redmond, for those families looking to get out and catch fish, let's start with the big girls first. Would you be more inclined to, say, fish Apollo Bay, which is, I suppose, the closest place where anglers are getting regular catches of barrels versus Gippsland, where we're seeing some incredible fish being caught, particularly swordfish, and we'll cover that a little later? Or would you just bite the bullet, travel the 4.5 hours, get to Portland where you know those school fish are in far closer and they're a lot easier to target versus the big kilometres that you're doing launching off Apollo Bay and a lot of the other southern regions that are a lot closer than Portland to Melbourne?
A lot of people want these big fish, and don't get me wrong, there's a lot of school... What is actually strange is so many school fish actually amongst these barrels at Apollo Bay. But the problem, I'm going to say it right now, it's a friggin' heck of a long way out. It's 88. It is a long way out.
You can go to King Island. It's closer, isn't it?
It's literally pretty much exactly the same. How far out you are going. It's a 2.5 hour steam, especially
at a good clip.
A 10 knots wind is still out there. It feels like it's 40 because it's up and down. It's a long way out. Make sure you have the fuel range and whatnot. But lake's entrance, long way out for these swordfish. 100 k's at times, if not more.
Yeah.
These school tuna, yeah.
It is safer at the moment, though, because there are so many people that are fishing.
Yeah, it is.
So there are boats there.
And the oil rigs there, they've got the tenders there. If something were to go wrong, which I hope it doesn't for anyone, but if it does, to be honest with you, this school holidays, if you want to have a bit of fun with the kids, I would honestly be going straight to Port Phillip Bay where the squid are going red hot. Western Port, Wayne Blake. We're actually going to get him on the show today, Pat. He has had a tremendous week also on the big squid out of Western Port. He went down and caught some beautiful mulloway. I'm going to let him tell that story. But if you want to, you can do this land base, the Glenelg, down at Nelson there, and catch beautiful land base mulloway. You've also got the piers around Queenstiff. I know St. Leonard's Pier on my side has been fishing very well land base with the calamari. Yes, you got to go a little bit on dark, but just pop a jacket on. You can always warm up. Take layers. You can always take layers off. And you've also got the garfish moving in so many places. Frankston Piers, the garfish with the kids. As long as you're catching with kids, you're going to have fun. So you need to make sure that you head somewhere where you're going to catch stuff, and there are a few good places.
As we move further up that eastern seaboard, Eden obviously fishing incredibly well, but sort of you can just... You can cut and paste that every week, basically. But for those that can, and obviously it's been a challenging time for where COVID sit and the hotspots at different various sort of Sydney regions, but your best bet is still sort of heading south of Sydney with how well it is fishing.
It is once again to the similar story we're having here. They're a long way out too, those bluefin out of Eden and Jarvis Bay, JB as we know call it. But there's so many options. I know it's winter, but there's so many options. Don't feel like it's winter, you can't go fishing. Pick your times. And I know it contradicts what I said before about being cold, but if you want to have just fun in the sun, pick your times in your weather. And go out just after the sun comes up. By 9, 10 o'clock, it's like you're back to just a jumper. So, obviously, bear in mind that it might on its day, it might be a bit worse. But kids, like you said earlier, it's all about catching fish, Pat, having fun, and doing it while you're enjoying it. Yeah, rather than... And school holidays is coming up, like you said there, and it's going to be a really, really good, hopefully, couple of weeks.
This is Real Adventures. There'll be plenty more after the break.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. Before we get to the social club, the 2022 Toyota Land Cruiser 300 series, it's all but been revealed, Redmond. Now, on this show, we're clearly more than just fishing. We love our outdoors. But towing the boat is a critical component, as is towing the caravan. And in Australia, typically, there's nothing much generally until you move into your sort of F-150s and your Dodgers that tow above 3.5 tons. And I just want to know, from your opinion, do you think it is a missed opportunity that the new 300 series Land Cruiser, its towing capacity will remain at 3.5 tons? Even though it's downsized to the V6 engine, so there's not the V8 now, it still tows 3.5 tons. But is that a missed opportunity where we are continuing to look for cars that will tow our maxi trailerable boats?
I've got a few mates who, a lot of mates, to be honest with you, that own these cars and make a lot more money than myself. But they actually have modifications to their car to actually allow them to tow up to 4 ton. And surely if there's modifications they can put in play to get their rating up to 4 ton, surely Toyota should have done that.
Well, what,
in my opinion.
Well, what isn't known at the moment is whether the new chassis are compatible with the aftermarket upgrade kits.
Ah, right.
That can increase the towing capacity to 4.5 ton.
Sorry, I just took that out of your words. I didn't actually read the notes then.
So at the moment, it sits at 3.5, but we're after more now.
Why isn't that built into that?
Well, I think we want to roll off. Absolutely. I think we want to roll off the showroom floor with the ability to tow 4.5 tons.
Especially for 180 grand or whatever they're worth.
And not be rolling it. Yeah, not have to go to a Dodge or to a Ford 150 or the new Ford Lightning if it comes to the Australian shores. We've seen Rivian, which is one of the new EV manufacturers. They're testing in New Zealand at the moment, so they're not far off production. Whether we're going to see them in Australia is yet to be seen. And unfortunately, we miss out on so many of these incredible vehicles. But just that ability to tow 4.5 tons, which then, you know,
they would have had the market covered. Like, as in, it was like to get another car to do that, well, they've got the new car come out.
Dodge has had such an incredible Ram has had such an incredible run in Australia because we just don't have too many offerings of, you know, 4.5 or four ton offerings without it having to upgrade aftermarket. So an interesting move. It'll be interesting to see as more detail filters out because it is one of the iconic Australian vehicles.
And they're a beautiful car. I was in Paul's car up in Apollo Bay during the week, and we got in to go head up to the pub for dinner, and they are literally spacious. They're a phenomenal car. So I'm shocked that they haven't had that built in. And when you've just said there about not having not being compatible to the upgrade kits that people use, that's a little bit annoying.
Well, we hope that they
if they're not. Yeah.
Remains to be seen. Let's get to the social club where we take your questions from social media. If you've got a question for Aaron or I, make sure you shoot it into our Real Adventures socials pages on Instagram and Facebook, or better yet, download our Real Adventures app, which is free to download. There's great stuff on there, whether it's rigs, whether it's recipes, you name it. It's all on our app, as well as the podcasts that get sent out every week as well. Let's get to the first question, which is from Tom. When taking baits out for cubing barrels, is it worth taking a range of different species for baits? Aaron, what did you use over the weekend?
So it is actually important to take the range, but it's more important to match what it's on as much as possible. So what I mean by that is there's no point pulling up on a thing of red bait and throwing in souries that are double the size or three times the size. Pillies will work most of the time because that's going to be the most common thing to get, but pillies are one of those things that everything eats. Like, they just do.
Yep.
Where a big soury, you don't know if the barrel might be funny on that. So pilchards will be my number one. Having everything will be important, but souries don't school up as such, Pat. They're more of, like, when the barrels are on souries, you actually see them skipping out of the top of the water and whatnot.
Yep.
So they're chasing, and that's where your lures come in. And those fish I got a few weeks ago, we had souries jumping out of the water, and they were quite hard to keep up with the barrels. They were so widespread that it actually, it was hard to chase them down.
Yep.
So I don't know about the soury side of it and whatnot, but 100%, take maybe a couple of dead yakkers out, or a packet of dead yakkers if you've caught some recently, you've had them for a gummy trip ready to go. But yeah, definitely be working those. I'd definitely be working the baits with whatever you can get and scoop it up with a net if you really want to. Next question is from Gav for you, Patrick. I've seen your Instagram. You're in Noosa, Patrick. Are you going to sneak out into one of the estuaries for a bit of a fish?
It's been tough. We actually took out one of the pontoon boats up through that Noosa estuary system yesterday. The weather hasn't been super kind to us. So we haven't really had the opportunity to. It's actually a great place to fish Noosa. I've been here quite a few times, and generally it's been with the family because it's sort of one of those family destinations, Redmond. But if you've got the time to fish it, there's some wonderful spots to go fishing. But on this occasion, we haven't quite had the ability to do that with obviously Footy Thursday night, and then because we've got a little bit of a slightly longer turnaround into Essendon, we've got a bit of time. So not this time, Gav. The next one is from Darren Stockdale, and I forgot to mention off the top of the Social Club Redmond, every week we're giving away a Real Brand hat, a Real Brand fishing top for our Social Club for the best question. And Darren, you are the winner this week. Hello, Pat and Aaron. My name is Darren. I'm starting to get into soft plastics and hard body lure fishing for trout and brim. What is your recommendation for the most important lure? And what would you recommend? Thanks, boys.
Yeah, so basically there's so many different methods out there, but you need to use them correctly is probably the more important thing, Pat. And you'll probably found this using different methods in the otways for your trout and whatnot. You got your selters that you cast in there, and you've actually got to move them quite quick. But if you get a little bib lure, you can actually just little flicks to get the bib down and let it pause and let them float. School tuna out the front of Barwon Heads, where we got a lot of them over the past, say, 2 years, for instance, when the season's right, the water's right, sometimes the tuna, I'll cast the plastic out and I'll let it sink. Let it sink, and then it's a little flick up, and then you'll get them like that. Then other days you cast it, and they actually want you to move it. But then also you've got so many different methods for brim too. I think Dan Mackerel, who's a regular in the show, he's a tournament fisherman, brim fisherman, his method is for brim, if you think you're going slow, go slower. So
it's that barren
it's
method,
just
isn't
that
it?
It's literally, yep. And he's using bib lures. So you need to work out what you're chasing. A lot of lures that you buy these days have so many recommendations on the back of the actual packet that will tell you a lot of the information about it.
And a lot of them, I forget the name of, it's not a code, but you know when you put your camera up to it and then it shows you a video of it? I'm not sure.
Oh, really?
You know how you do a Q? Oh, it's a QR code.
Yeah, we're pretty familiar with those. We do that every day of our life now.
Sorry, they have a QR code, and a lot of it links sometimes to sort of YouTube tutorials and those sorts of things on how to retrieve your lures. So it's worth spending a bit of time in. And that being said, most reputable tackle distributors, they've got guys that genuinely fish when they sort of operate out of their sort of fishing departments. Melbourne Marine's a great example. Jamie that works in their fishing department, he fishes every...
And it's Lee Rayner's there now. He's another fantastic fisher.
You know, they fish every weekend and in the afternoons when they can, when Andrew allows them to. So, you know, they're spending plenty of time in the water. So ask the experts that are in there, and you can gauge pretty quickly with your bullshit meter on, you know, whether they're giving you good advice or not. To wrap up, Harry, I'm fishing over the school holidays with the kids. What's the best coloured squid jig to use?
Missed the key word, land-based, he said.
Land-based.
Fishing land-based around Melbourne. What you've got to do is, you can't just say what is the best jig. You need to actually suss out where you're fishing. If you're driving home from work one night, pull into the pier and have a bit of a look. Like, what's going on the bottom? Is the tidal movement there? Whatever it is. Now, just an example, we'll go Queenscliff, we'll call it the Queenscliff Squid Pier, as it's known. Lots and lots of people chase squid there. problem is tide pulls through there.
Yep.
So you can't just go there and expect to rock up with a 2.5 jig and expect it to work. You need to have a range.
And how do you find out the weight size? Say if you've had it in your tackle box for a while and you can't quite remember because it was on the packaging, but you can't see it now.
The slower it sinks, the more squid you're going to catch, but as long as it's not floating.
Yep.
So drop it in the water and let it sink down to have a good look at it. Now, a place like, for instance, Queenscliff Harbour, fantastic place to walk around there catching squid amongst some beautiful boats, get ink on them, and you want to use that 2 to 2.5, zero tide, only a couple of metres deep. If you rocked up with a 3.5, it's not going to work. If you're fishing out wide, say, for instance, off Mornington Pier for squid, it's quite deep at certain parts of that jetty. You've also got the Portsea Pier, which is one of the iconic big squid fishery in Victoria, land-based. You're going to struggle just rocking up with one jig. What I would do is I wouldn't be worried about your colours too much. Buy three jigs. One in 2.5, one in 3, one in 3.5. And also another method, if you are a little bit stuck, is running a float on them, Pat, to get them out into that tide a bit more. If you run a float and actually have the squid jig sitting under it, the only drama with that is I find it's better to use a baited jig for that method.
Yep.
But the only drama with that is you're actually not working the squid jig like you should be. It's a bit of a lazy fishing way, but it does work. So that's so many different options that you can use to catch yourself some squid.
Nice work, Redmond. That wraps up the social club. If you've got a question for Aaron or I, make sure you send it into our Real Adventures socials, or better yet, download our Real Adventures app. Congratulations, Darren. Send us a direct message, mate. You get yourself a Real Brand hat and a Real Brand fishing top. Just throw me pen across the desk. Plenty more Real Adventures to come after the break.
Gearing up for Dometic. Always stay relaxed and hydrated wherever your adventure takes you with Dometic's rugged drinkware.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's now time for gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic. Our guest, special guest rather, this morning is Gwayne Blake, Australian pro angler for Frogley's Offshore, Mako Sunnies, Staby Craft, Garmin, you name it. But we know him as our salt guide to IC.
My partner in crime.
To yourself. Good morning, Gwano.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Oh, we're not too bad. And you've been doing a little bit of what I've been doing, gallivanting around the country, which is always, stateside, we should say. You've been doing a fair bit of travelling and catching some bloody good fish, Gwane. Take us through these mulloway.
Okay. So, I was literally sitting at home waiting for, Metro Melbourne to get unlocked, and as soon as we were unlocked, I just shot straight down to Nelson and fished the Glenelg River. So basically, it's a river system that's nearly 390 kilometres long. Most of it's you're only allowed to do 8 knots in, apart from a few ski areas where you can go wide open throttled. And just basically going up the system, I'm using my side view with a Garmin and basically looking for temperature breaks on the sounder or bait. And once I find bait, I can pick that up quite easily, 8 knots.
So what's the theory behind the temperature break, Gwane?
There's going to be areas where there's going to be a lot of fresh water pushing down, and that fresh water is going to be quite cold, because it's come off the land, fallen out of the sky, that sort of stuff. And that colder temperature is going to push the bait down, and you'll find that the bait will sit on the temperature break. It might only be like 0.5 of a degree, but that's enough to, take notice of and slow up and then start sounding. And then once I find the bait, I'll then start looking for the fish that would eat the bait and then, mull away from there. So I might not be sounding too many mull away. I might be sounding Espy perch and brim, but then with my live scope, I can go over the top of them again with live scope, and you can actually distinguish the shape of the fish in amongst those schools. So you can see the more humped back of a brim versus the longer, elongated shape of a mulloway. And by doing that, once I find that, then I know that they're in a feeding area. There's a lot of fish together. And the mulloway will either be picking off an injured or a small brim, or just eating the same bait that they're eating together, and I'm fishing them.
So you've posted some incredible shots of the mulloway that you've caught. Can we take a step back and talk to us about the Glenelg River, how far it is from Metro Melbourne? Obviously, we're in school holidays now for most Victorians. It's a beautiful part of the country, albeit cold this time of the year. It's still pretty damn special.
It is very special. It's only a very small town. I think they're only about 190 people. Pretty friendly. They've got the pub with a bar and bistro. They've got the nice little tackle shop there. Both the tackle shop and the local servo do nice bacon and egg toasties, so that's worth going for.
Aaron, important.
I was more worried about the pub was.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about the kids as well here, Ed. So, yeah, you've got the river mouth itself, which is slightly open. It's not, you know, somebody can go in and out of it with boats. It's got enough movement that you get brim and salmon and stuff out of the mouth. And then the river system itself is just a massive big limestone river system. So there's big limestone cliffs all along it. You get a few reefs inside the river. Most of it's around about 5 to 8 metres deep. There's a few 8 metre holes, so a lot of 5 metre areas. And it's very long and winding, so you start in Victoria, and as you get up the river system, there's a big sweeping bend, and there's 2 kilometres of it in South Australia, and then you're back into Victoria again as you keep going further up.
It's one of the great places, Redmond, if you've got the time to spend doing a little bit of research and then sort of travelling down there. It is a bit out of the way, but it's, you spent time there. It's a incredible part of the country.
The river's beautiful. Like, it's spectacular to look at as well. Like, it's really, really, yeah, really nice drive.
Scenery, it's beautiful. And probably the other thing to point out is you can basically fish it in any weather. Doesn't matter what way the wind's going or how strong it's blowing. By you moving around a corner, you could have it's a southerly wind and it's not nice. You go around a corner and next thing you know, it's a northerly wind that's blowing over the top, you know, top of the boat, and everything's working again. So it's an area you can go down, and it's not far from Portland. It's another, you know, hour out of your way from Portland. But when you've made that effort all the way to go all the way to Portland, and you might spend a day offshore and get smashed a bit, and you'd be too tired to go back out and chase a tuna again, just an hour's drive back up, you know, down the coast a bit further, and you can fish in the river system and have a nice, relaxing day. It's not a hard on your body system. It's a really nice, you know, experience being down there.
Gwayne, you've obviously fished out of your 1850 Fisher, your Staby craft.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, it's got the balance where you can obviously fish offshore, but you can fish inland and you fish your river systems. What size boat would you recommend to fish through the Glenelg River? Because when most people think of river, they think of something smaller, but the Glenelg is slightly different. You can take some pretty big boats in there.
Yeah, so you can get a 9 metre boat up the Glenelg. The boat wraps are fine. There's no, the bridge is tall enough that you can get any boat under it. There's a couple of, you know, the old sort of paddle steamer style boats up there, big houseboats, like people tied up to their dock, so there's plenty of room. But basically, if you've got a 4 metre tinny or 3.5 metre tinny up to a 9 metre boat, it's fine for that. Obviously, the bigger boats probably more expensive. You don't want to knock them around too much. So you've just got to be aware of coming up towards edges and corners. There might be rock bars and stuff like that. But you stick to the middle of the river. There's plenty of water in it.
We're fast approaching school holidays, Gwayne.
No, we're in them, mate. We're in them.
Oh, we're in them?
We're in them.
Well, kids one, I don't know that stuff. Sorry. We're in school holidays, Gwayne. And we spoke a bit at the top of the show about your squid and your whiting and your species of fish and keep the kids active. And you've been having a really, really, really successful time landing some beautiful calamari through Western Port. Take us through what your methods are going to getting those squid.
Okay, so, yeah, with school holidays is here. This is something we've actually spoke about with Salt Guide. We wanted to actively target as many different species as we could coming out of lockdown and coming into school holidays to just give everyone options. So the squid at the moment, they start to come into the port and they're these large breeding squid. So if you actively target the main areas of the port, you will get two or three. But what we've done with SoulGuide, instead of waiting for the squid to come into us, we've gone out chasing them. So we've sort of created our own fishery in the last couple of years. We're actively targeting these big southern calamari in waters of anywhere from 20 metres right to 50 metres deep. And we're catching, you know, calamari 4.8 kilos, 60 centimetre hoods that are, you know, nearly sort of 2 centimetres thick. So it's really big squid. The other thing that we've been doing is gars. So right through the eastern side of Port Phillip Bay from Mordialloc right down to Rosebud, there's been plenty of good garfish. You're allowed 40 per person. They're big enough to eat, plus you get your bait. So they've been really good. There's been a few salmon around too. And just as the temperatures started to drop off in the last couple of weeks in West Port, I've started to push more over to Port Phillip. And we've got that warmer water in Port Phillip from sort of Sorrento down through to Port Phillip Heads and then back up to St. Leonard's. That warm pocket of water is around about 13.5 degrees. Plenty of whiting there, so we've been fishing for whiting too. And then obviously you're doing your barrel thing too and chasing tuna offshore. So we're trying to cover all the bases with SoulGuide with that. It's been really successful. We get a lot of sign-ups for this time of year too, which is fantastic for us.
Gwayne, beautiful work as always. Gwayne Blake, one of our SoulGuide anglers and a regular on Real Adventures. Thanks for joining us this morning, Gwayne.
We'll throw in there. He's a guide too. Give him a call if you want a guide. He gets on your boat and he'll take you through and he'll take you through everything you need to know. So head to his Instagram and Facebook. Give Gwayne a message on Gwayne Blake Professional and he'll get back to you with a few dates he's got available. Thanks, G-Man.
Thanks, guys.
That was Gearing Up for Dometic Mobile Living Made Easy. And now it's time for Red's Review for Club Marine. Redmond, what are we talking about this week? What are we reviewing?
We're going to review what we spoke about at the start of the show. I said it was going to be the tip, but I thought it was actually important and worthy of a review. Now,
you've changed mid-show.
That's fine.
Okay.
I've seen your coach do some funny things too on the football field. So if you want to look after these tuna, you need to do it properly. Now, there's no point going out there without the right tools and making life hard. Having all the tools in your hand ready to go, it makes life so much more convenient. So what we're reviewing this week is your tuna toolkit. It's everything you need to do the right things. Now, if you're just joining to the show and wondering what we're talking about, at the start of this show, we covered basically how to look after bluefin by spiking them and everything basically this kit has. Now, if you do want to listen to any of our shows, make sure you download our Real Adventures app. It has podcasts on there. You can listen to all that, recipes and a few other bits and pieces, Pat. But this product here is, if you chase bluefin, which nearly every single person these days do, Pat, from the Port Phillip Bay Heads, New South Wales coast, into WA, South Australia, you name it, the bluefin are literally coming back in such good numbers. Let's look after our fishery. Buy one of these kits, as they're called. It comes with your spike. It comes with your wire. Comes with your kniffy, which cuts the side of the fish. Knife there for those that are playing at home. And basically, it all comes together. And it's around $160. And now, the reason I say you could probably make half the stuff yourself for a quarter of the price. But this stuff, I used it during the week properly for the first time. This stuff works. Yep. It just works. Running the actual wire down the spine of the fish, it's perfect size. So it all works. $160. You can get them on Walesy's Tackle, any good tackle store. I know Paul Worsing sells them at his Tackle World in Mornington and Cranbourne. So make sure you do get one of these and keep them in the cabin of your boat for when you do come across that bluefin, whether it's a 5 kilo one or 155 kilo one.
That's Red's Review.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. We're in the last quarter, Red.
I want you to get a new line for me next week instead of welcome back to Real Adventures. What have you got? Got anything else for me?
Well, I'm welcoming everyone back to Real Adventures.
Fair point.
They've been in an ad. Now they're back. We've got a few minutes left to go of the show.
A bit repetitive.
And we need something good from you. Now, we're approaching school holidays. Your tip for the week centres around those. Getting ready to travel. And we've all been there before. You get to your, wherever it might be, your caravan
park. You more often than others.
That's fair. You don't want to rock up at Port Ferry and then all of a sudden none of your electronics work.
You are spot on. And I'll be honest with you, a lot of people pack their boats away before that little COVID circuit breaker, we'll call it, and for the winter, as they do, but then they get that rage to get back out on the water. They want to get out now. We've all come out of lockdown. It's fantastic that we're all allowed to be back on the water. Make sure you do the right things. Engine's been serviced. Make sure you've got your fuel to get to wherever you're going, and I say that because the Swordfish are going mental at Lakes Entrance. The Apollo Bay Tuna are going fantastic, and people are launching at Werribee coming down to catch White at St. Leonard's. Make sure everything's ready to go. But number one, your batteries. Your batteries are a killer. You can get little jump packs that are fantastic to sit in your boat that will give you that jump you need to get yourself out of trouble. But just put a trickle charge on them before you go, or even take it to the destination you're going and run it overnight to get that battery up and going. So Red's tip this week is just, if you are heading away for the weekend or for the school holidays, take everything you need to get yourself out of trouble and also charge those batteries, because like you said, Pat, there's nothing worse than rocking up to the boat ramp and only my key does this. Beep for a long time until you know it's dead.
Well, there might be something that is worse, and the flying gaff this week goes up north, up to the NT, and ABC Darwin posted this during the week. But a fella by the name of Steve, who slept in his boat at Arnhem Bay on the weekend, he's just reminded everyone why you can never be too complacent around crocodiles, particularly up north. His 6-metre boat with a 200-horsepower Yammy on the back was munched on by a giant croc. And we saw the photos during the week and we're having a bit of a chuckle about it. But that croc has gotten out of the water a pretty decent distance.
Where is it on the engine? It's up quite high, isn't it?
It's above the riding of the 200. It's 200 horsepower. So that croc's
three-quarters of the way up the actual head of the engine.
It has done some serious damage. So Steve, this week, he said he said he didn't put any sort of leave any bait on the bait board. The giant crocodile marks.
He was the bait.
might be lending a different story. Anyway, thanks for your company this morning on Real Adventures. We hope you enjoy the show. We'll see you on the water soon, Redmond.
Go on fishing.